side.
Hello, everybody. This is Daryl Mendelson, a co-host of All Joking Aside, along with my co-worker, whose name is
Cohen. Gregory Cohen right here.
Cohen,
we got the little prefix co in three different parts there. It's been a while, my friend.
We haven't done this for some time.
Yeah.
And you're not aging well.
No, I am not. I am not. Under the hat,
yeah.
Not only bald, actually no skull cap.
Oh my God.
My brain is exposed here.
Oh my God. Well, at least you have one. That's a good thing. Anyway, we're back here with All Joking Aside, episode 108. We have a little bit of a different kind of a feel for today. We had somebody reach out to us to talk to us about our show.
Which means someone is watching.
Yeah, we found our one viewer in Texas. So without further ado, let's go ahead and bring him in and we'll start our little discussion.
All right, let's get him in here.
Marco, yay. Hi there, Marco.
Welcome.
Hey, how are you?
We're doing great. This is Daryl and Greg, and this is Marco Gamboa, who is many things, one of which is an author, and we're going to show a cover of his book, which is available through, I believe, Amazon, and it's called Within Normal Limits. I had the opportunity of reading it. So, Marco, we have the format. You know, we're going to get to that in a little bit where you come up with a topic and we're going to discuss together. But having read your book and knowing relatively little about you, and we appreciate you reaching out to us because you saw some former podcasts and appreciated it. You have a definite story arc. Your life is interesting, and your forward talks about it being it's a fictitious book.
Mm-hmm.
However, that said, I'm telling the audience, having read it, of course, the main character has got your name. And some of
the very creative choice there, Marco, by the way.
I ran out of ideas.
And some of the storyline you do reference as part of your own real life. So I'm a little blurry. I know you have MS, and we're going to hand over to you. I'll give you a chance to describe your life and your story. The book you write lovely. It's a lovely written book. You mentioned to me that you're a stand-up comic. One would not draw that conclusion having read this book, because the book is being honest, a good book. It's melancholy, and it talks about the path of this person. And I've got to believe in my heart, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that there's some bleed over between you and this character. So, but that said, tell us about your path, your story right now. We'll get to our little thing where we have a discussion about other stuff. But tell us about yourself, your book, and your life, and who you are.
Of course. And first off, you guys, thank you so much for not only having me, but also for reading the book, Daryl. I really appreciate that. And and you know, I'm really happy. So a little bit about me. I started to get sick in about at 2011-ish. Misdiagnosed for about 10 years. Finally, a doctor was like, hey, let's trigger some MRIs because I had an episode. For a long time, it was like, oh, it's just anxiety. I had just had kids. So every doctor was like, oh, well, that's terrifying, right? So that's what's messing you up. And then fast forward, had the MRIs. And in 2020, they were like, hey, you have multiple sclerosis. That's what's been causing all this. So while the time that I was sick, I became agoraphobic, and I couldn't do much. And so all I did was write. Originally the stories were going to be just a gift to my kids to say, like, hey, you know, dad wasn't the most normal dad, but he made something, right? And whatever they did. So as I was like preparing that, I started to give it to friends, and they were like, hey, like, you know, this is something you should shop it around. And I did, and someone bit and said that they'd love to publish it. And so it got published. Now the book is 100% fictitious in the sense that the stories that happened. So the stories that happened were always what I thought was going to be worst case scenario of what could happen. Right.
Okay.
Never being treated, never really like having a foundation to kind of improve life. And then, but in real life, I got put on some amazing medications. I've lived as normal of a life as you can imagine. There are some, things that I tend to do to try to, mitigate it. But I mean, you might not think it to see me, but I run quite a bit, and I exercise and stuff like that. And so, yeah. So the book is terribly sad. It's funny, because I've been on several podcasts where, they were like, "Your book is such a self-help book," and I thought, "You didn't read it, did you?" And so, because my intention was never to help anyone improve their lives. My intention was just to give time between myself and fictitious Marco and kind of spend time with him, right? And so it was this weird relationship that I had with the character, in trying to sit with him and think like, okay, what is the worst that could happen? And as you can see, but there are a ton of things in those book in the book that, my kids are 11 and 13. They're not older like they are in the book. If you get to the part about the tree, I did cut a tree down, but just because it was messing with the pool, not because of some existential thing. It's just the pool guy said, "Hey, I'm going to raise your rate if this thing keeps messing with it." And so yeah, but in a nutshell, that's pretty much it. And then, sorry, go ahead, go ahead.
No,
No, I was gonna
I'm
go ahead.
curious for people who have not read it yet. And as far as I'm concerned, I hear about MS a lot. There are a lot of people that are suffering from it, and I know very, very little about it. And I would just be interested in knowing what were those first symptoms that got you to a doctor that they couldn't diagnose?
So this is the crazy thing. MS is such a weird disease, and it, yet it is so prevalent. As soon as I can't tell you how many podcasts I've been on where it's been the same thing. Oh, my sister, my brother, my neighbor, and just so for me, the first things that started to happen were cognitively, I couldn't. There were times where I would just look around and think, "Damn, what was I?" It's almost like you lose connection and you struggle with thought, and I'm one of those people who my mind is racing all the time, but then you can almost feel this inability to kind of catch what you're trying to think. And I don't mean that in the, I'm multitasking and I walked into the kitchen. Sometimes it's literally like just a blank feeling of loss. And so I had that. And I don't want to tie that to, because I know a lot of folks meditate, things like that, where you try to achieve that silence. This is not that. This was very much like a confusing aspect of like, what's going on. So I had that. I had problems with my vision to where I was losing sight. I also had a ton of vertigo, a ton of dizziness, and then a ton of weakness in my left leg and left arm. At one point they thought, "Oh man, what if it's a stroke?" They put me through some sort of scan and they said, "No, it's not that." But it was all these things. And what I noticed for a lot of people, because so many people are misdiagnosed, MRIs are terribly, terribly, terribly expensive. And I also think that doctors don't always suspect the worst case scenario, and so they go through these checklists. And so it's one of those things where if I look back, at first I was really upset once I got the diagnosis. I think I ended up counting like seven doctors that misdiagnosed it. And and I was really upset, but then I just thought like, if I put myself in those shoes, you just kind of look at the big shiny rock, which was like, "Hey, this guy just had a kid. He's probably an anxious individual," which I am. But yeah, but you have a lot of people that will just start falling. You guys are very much into comedy, and I feel awful that I can't remember his name, but Squiggy from Laverne and Shirley, he had MS. And then, and if you guys ever get a chance, his book's really good. But his thing was that too, where randomly he would just fall and he couldn't explain how he got to the fall. And so that's a big one. The vision one's a big one. The one that's terrifying, I haven't had it yet, is people can't swallow. And so you'll
Oh,
be like
I've heard of that.
chewing.
Yes.
And then and then the other one that was happening a lot back then too, that I thought I was having a heart attack, was now they coin it an MS hug, but all it is your muscles and your lungs spasm. And so it's almost like it knocks the air out of you, and just and you just don't know, right? And so so it was all that. And then I think also, because you start to get anxious, that's the other part too, where a lot of folks will tie one and one together. And a lot of individuals, and when I quote a lot of individuals, I'm specifically thinking of folks in my like local like MS circles and things
Right,
like
sure.
that. I'm not like quoting papers or anything like that, but yeah, that was the point. But just to touch really quick, because you guys answered it, or y'all said something earlier. So to connect the piece on the transition, the book is terribly, terribly sad. I am not like that. I grew up with, one of the most hilarious, vulgar families that I can imagine. And so when I would go do these readings, it was just such a terrible thing. And you would see people very like, one of the ones that the one that really made my transition is I went, and it was kind of like a chronic illness, cancer survivor going through cancer, and everyone was asked to read, and people were crying and whatnot. And I thought, so there's a chapter, the funeral, Daryl, that the character just says a vulgar joke, which that is real. My grandma taught me that joke when I was like in fourth grade.
It's
And
even too racy for our show to repeat. Oh, God.
But that's one of those things where I think the dynamic for me changed. And I said, listen, if you guys want to buy the book, I have copies here. You can buy it at Barnes or whatever the case is. But I didn't want to make someone sad, and so I just started turning it into jokes.
Well, in a weird sense, it's an adventure story. It's a person's travels through life, and there's something to be said about any kind of a story about humanity. And you're saying it's a fictitious character. Whoever this character would be, it is an interesting story. Yeah, you're not going to see the words on the back cover. This is a feel good book. You're not going to see that, but it is well written. I really appreciated it, and it's certainly a sad, but it is intriguing. I'll give you that. It's an intriguing story, and I appreciate having read it. Now you talk about I don't remember where I saw this. So you mentioned it to me, or we read it someplace. Two different things. Oh, well, your bio. You said Doctor of Jurisprudence. Are you a Doctor of Jurisprudence and stand-up comic? Talk about those two things.
Masters of Jurisprudence.
Master.
So
Okay, thank you.
yeah, so yeah, so I've been like a lifelong student who whenever someone looks at my resume, they think like, what were you doing? I graduated, my first degree was in English, and then I've been in business for a really long time. And one of the things that I think people don't connect all the time in business is the psychology of really kind of driving products further. And so from the bachelor's of English, I got the bachelor's of psychology, and then I got really interested because of the roles that I was having in law, specifically corporate compliance law. And so I said, you know what? I don't want to be a lawyer, but at the same time, I really want to understand it. So I did the Master of Jurisprudence, and then finishing up a master's in business administration right now. So
Wow.
I absolutely love, I don't know, I'm a big reader of just absolutely anything, and I just have this itch of, it's like fixing puzzles, and I feel like
Yeah.
school is like that. And so yeah.
Greg and I have a relationship to law too, but it entails parking tickets. So just it.
Yeah.
Well, and the stand-up comedy thing, before we get into our little riff here, what's your stand-up comic background?
So I just started to get invited after that reading.
Okay.
People came out, And it was just, hey man, can you do this? Can you come do this? Can you come do that? And so it's all been local. It's all been little small things, but it's been
Okay.
one of those things that's really opened the doors. I'm actually writing a book right now with a comedian. And so that, and I love it because it's, if I told you the premise, it's completely different from what I wrote, but it's the same thing at school, right? Where I don't ever want to just do what's comfortable for me. I want to try to figure out stuff that I'm not known for, or I'm not, into it. I think that's the thing about comedy. And so am I jumping too far ahead to give you the topic?
No,
No, feel
actually, it's a
free.
really good time.
It is.
So one of the things that I've noticed about comedy is that whether it's the fan or the comedian, or whether it's just some random person at work who happens to be really funny at church, wherever the case is, I often feel that comedy brings about such a vulnerability between not only the person saying the joke, because it's like, well, what if no one laughs? And secondly, the individual who then kind of appreciates that you put yourself up there. And so my topic was what would you say that based on y'all's lighthearted sense of, viewing life, do you feel that you've developed very strong relationships because of the vulnerability that comedy entails?
Wow,
Is that
that's
your
really an interesting take. And
that is.
you hurt me by asking that. I am so deeply wounded right now. No, I think that's really insightful. It is comedy. I got to tell you, I've been doing comedy my entire life, theatrically, writing, various things like that. The one thing that I never had the balls to do was stand up. And it's exactly because of what you're talking about. It is the rawest form of comedic judgment. Right? I mean, it's like if you are in a play, if you are in a farce and you are doing this play and people are laughing, great feeling. You are causing laughter. But if they don't like it, it's the play's fault. It's the direction.
And there's another moment
There's
coming up.
always something. If you are up there telling jokes or stories and hoping to evoke a laugh and no one's laughing, it's because you are failing. And I've always wanted to. I've really always wanted to. I fail in so many other things. Oh well.
You're pretty good at
I am. I am a great success
it.
in failure.
Well, is it really? It's interesting though too, because I've read about a lot of comics myself. I've not done stand up. My brother did a little bit for a short time. A lot of them. I mean, there's a panoply of emotions for different comics is what they're going through, but a lot of them actually use the rejection or lack of response as being that tool for fine tuning. They don't take it personally. I mean, to have that kind of ar of emotional armor would be fantastic to get up there, do your thing, and say, okay, I misjudged that, and just to hear it that way would be a whole different experience than being raw and vulnerable. And I think there's a maybe a I think there should be a healthy blend of both of those, probably in an ideal situation.
Yeah,
But
I think if you're not vulnerable when you are being comedic, you are not giving the comedy everything it's due.
I
You
love
know,
that.
you're holding something back. And if you're holding something back, an audience feels that. You've got to lay yourself out there. And
That's what we're going to call you, Greg, the crying stand-up.
it's why I've got that huge tattoo of a
There
target on my chest. You know, I mean, but yeah, it's an interesting thing. I mean, I think that the vulnerability is essential. I think, and it is. It is both, like Daryl says, a tool to perfect your act, and the act itself,
Well,
you know, it's
that's
the
interesting
connection.
because people do it for different reasons. There's, we all are insecure, right? That's the human condition. So part of us wants us to be accepted. There's no question. You don't do something with other people just to do it where you could have done it with a bunch of farm animals. You do it because you want a response from humankind to kind of acknowledge you and sort of reinforce your sense of self-worth a little bit. But then there also is the sense of creativity. I mean, there's a joy. I've written things, Marco, like you, and Greg's a great writer, where I want to share it, and whether somebody likes it or not would be kind of cool if they liked it. But often there's things I've written where I'm just personally self-satisfied, and I didn't need to have that response from somebody else. Doesn't mean that, they would have been joyful if they could have responded. But so I think when you do stand up, there's you're doing a little bit for others, you're doing a little bit for yourself, but the vulnerability is definitely there. That's the connect. You want to connect with people. That's the vulnerability, right?
I think personally speaking, for both of us, it's we've talked about this a little bit before. Comedy is pretty much started out as a defense mechanism, I think, for both of us. You know, it's you're not popular in school, make someone laugh. You know, you will gain popularity, at least with the losers. But it's and so I think it always tends to grow from that. You know, it's definitely, if you can get someone to laugh, you've got a relationship.
Agreed. A good, genuine, not a corporate laugh, but a good, genuine, you what? Kind of thing. I love that. I do agree with you. I also have been hearing a lot lately, and this is true for me. So I lived in Mexico. Mexico is rough. When you're little, Mexico, that was very terrifying days for me. My whole family's over there. And I often felt like my weapon to kind of neutralize the situation was humor, right? It was just like, hey, people are starting to get upset. There's some weird stuff happening. And it's like, bam, like, okay, I'm gonna bring this up, and then you fine-tune it. And yes, you want people, maybe that's why I was so comfortable. I'll tell you guys about the first time that I did it, but I think maybe that's why I got so comfortable with no one laughing, because I felt like if I was able to neutralize those situations as a kid, then it's like, well, what really can go wrong? You don't get invited back here again. I've been on stuff where they record it, and then, Daryl, you read the joke. I go rough. And, where they
I'm so curious about this joke. We'll talk offline. We'll talk.
But I, you know, I got off stage, and the producer was like, dude, I loved it. He was like, but I can't air that, because they were like doing like a live show, and he was like, I loved it, but there's situations like that where it's like, if you can get one or two people. So here's a fun one, and I'll keep it as clean as possible. You guys can edit it out if you want. So the first bookstore. So I got I the publisher, you get a bunch of books that you can hand out, send out to friends, and so on. And I said, I want to go hit up these bookstores. And I there's a local bookstore called Pink Zeppelin. And I went, and actually, I don't remember if it was there. But so I went and I handed her books. I said, hey, we do an open mic. People come, music, comedy, whatever, whatever. And I went up. I did my bit, and I mean, I didn't realize, but it was like metal night. So you have a bunch of, very like people just want to hear some music, and there I am, talking about my feelings and stuff. And I said, all right, guys, like, so let me ask y'all something. I said, let's say you were part of some organization, right? You're like origami class, or you're planting trees on the weekend. What if you later found out that it was a sex cult, but no one ever asked you to participate? And like nobody laughed, right? Like no one chuckled, no one anything. I get off stage or whatever, and the toughest looking dude kind of hits me, and he's like, "I'd be pissed, man." And I was like, "Okay,
You made
one
a connection.
person." Yeah. I was like, "You know what? I'll use that joke again then." And so, but
Yeah.
yeah.
A lot of times people don't want to respond because they don't want the person next to them to think that they're the kind of person who would respond to such a thing.
I
Yeah.
identified.
Yeah. I'll tell you
Yeah.
offline. I love what you did.
Yeah.
That's
That is
interesting.
wonderful.
That's it. So are you with this book that you, I mean, I don't know if there's other books right now, but with the book you currently have, this With the Normal Limits, are you making a tour of this thing? Are you going to bookstores? You mentioned readings and so on, or?
Yeah, I'm in between kind of figuring out what I'm doing right now. I'm really kind of loving the connections that I'm making with podcasts. The readings, I think, are here's the problem with some of the readings that I've done, is it turns into more of a and the thing is I don't mind this at all because I'm very like process driven, but I think a lot of people who do the readings are, more the writers who are kind of like workshopping, like, well, did you, like I did one at another little local, San Antonio has a ton of little bookstores. And I did another one where it was like, hey, it turned into like a bunch of writers coming in and it was awesome. But then it turned into like, well, how do you actually go about like
Yeah.
organizing into a novel? How do you go about,
Right.
doing this and doing it, which is awesome. But I realized until I can get a larger kind of following, I don't know if I'm adequately prepared to do readings like that. I often, when I look at my life, I think I have a drunken guardian angel who just is like, yeah, let's see how that goes, right? And so I find it hard to give people advice because I think a lot of what's happened to me has been accidents, amazing accidents, but nonetheless accidents.
Yeah. It happens, Greg and I do theater, both act. Greg's a wonderful director as well. And people come to see a show like a stand-up, they want to be entertained. But a good portion of the time, if you've had any kind of modicum of success, you will find people who've had lesser successes than you will want to leverage their connection to you to try to understand what they need to do. I guess that's just human nature. We always want to, go to those who have done and get some sort of a roadmap to how we can perhaps follow.
And that's awesome. I like
Yeah.
I'll help everybody. I'll help anybody, in any possible way, shape, or form. But I also don't know that, again, I don't know that I'm equipped. I think now if I was participating in something like that, it'd be like, listen, guys, like, if that's what we're going to talk about, let's just go get a bunch of beers later. We'll talk through it just as friends,
Right.
as opposed to like, hey, Marco came and did this talk. I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
So,
That's you up as the expert, but
and no, yeah. I mean, there's so many typos in the book that it's kind of one of those things that it's like, but by the time we have the fourth round of editing,
yeah.
I actually just did a podcast. It's not out yet. But have you guys ever read Tim O'Brien?
I know the name.
The things they carried, but they used to make everyone read these in school way back when, but it's like things they carried, going after Cacciato. But long story short, he went to Vietnam, wrote a bunch of books. But I just did an interview with someone who, met him and, got some mentorship from him. And, Tim O'Brien was reading his book and he popped it open. And he said, you have no idea. This is, I think, like the fourth or fifth edition of this, and they're still finding typos. And so it's one of those things where you got to draw the line and just, to even with a joke, right? Even if it's self-serving, you just got to draw a line and just shoot it out there.
Right.
And hopefully someone, picks it up. And if not, well, yeah.
I have I just recently copy I wrote a play and I've copywritten it, and after I submitted the button and had made the $45, I took a second look like 5 minutes later. I said, oh my God, look at this. So I had to deal with that. Then I started making a bunch of changes. I changed a lot of stuff, and then I just resubmitted it for a secondary copyright. Minutes after that, I looked at it, and
Yeah.
my eyes went right to the wrong word or the wrong punctuation or something. Yeah, it's kind of a you need to have 1,000. I think it's 1,000 people have to read it before you can get all the
Strangely enough,
punctuation.
that typo made his play hysterical.
Really? That's
No.
funny. Oh, I thought that a
No,
weird pause. So
and you're
like,
gullible on top of everything
there
else,
you
Marco. There you go.
go.
Oh my God.
Oh, my dog is going crazy. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're fine. You're fine. This the book that I wrote. If you went back to like 2011-ish to really look at what it is, that book is completely different. And I think it would have continued had I not eventually said, you know what, the hell with it. Like, I'm cutting it, and it is what it is.
Well, if a person's sitting there just picking up on the looking for the punctuation problems, and essentially they don't belong in a library, you should go ahead and enjoy the book for what it is.
Yeah,
But
agreed.
anyway, buddy Greg, how are we doing for time here?
We are actually we've kind of filled up our time, so that's
Okay. Oh, okay.
well,
Marco,
it's
thank
been
you
a
so
pleasure.
much.
It has
Really
been a
enjoyed this.
pleasure, Marco.
I love this. This was a fun one.
Yeah, thank you. And Greg will put up on when we do the post here, Greg will put your book up and tell
Absolutely.
everybody can find it on Amazon, correct?
Pretty any online retail, Target, Barnes and
I've always wanted to
Noble.
say this, wherever books are sold.
Oh my
There
goodness.
you go.
Wow.
And yes, we do. I'm quite honestly, I'm intrigued now. So I will
There you
certainly
go.
read it. I promise
Thank
you will get one sale out of this
you.
thing. And hopefully we recommend it. If it has any more insight than what Marco has shown us today, it's worth it because
I appreciate that.
you have been a wonderful guest. It's been
It's
a
been really
pleasure.
nice talking to you and getting to know you. And this is very different for us because out of 108 episodes, of which this is the 108th, we've never had somebody reach out to us because basically nobody likes us. So here there was an actual human being who
Thank you
reached out to
for
us.
not making us beg you to do
No, this was awesome. When you
so.
guys responded, I was like, oh my gosh, they're interested. So
Well,
this is really cool. I
we
appreciate it.
appreciate you and appreciate you reaching
Absolutely.
out, and we wish you all the best with
All the
everything
best.
you're doing, your stand up, your writing,
And your health.
and your health,
Thank you.
and
Thank you.
good stuff all around for you and your family.
Thank
So
you, guys.
thank you very much.
Oh,
And
wait,
we got
we
to do
have
our
our
sign
sign
up.
off. We
Okay.
really have not done this for a
No, we
while.
have. Okay. Am I going to do it or are you going to do it? Because I don't remember a damn.
You know what? I'll take care of it
You take
and
care of it.
join
Okay.
in here.
Well, Greg will speak and we'll re respond. Go
Just
ahead.
remember, be happy,
Be happy.
be healthy,
Be
be
healthy.
healthy, and most importantly, keep smiling.
Keep smiling, everybody.
Keep smiling.
Thanks for watching.
Thanks,
Take care.
Marco.
Bye, guys. Thank
Bye
you.
bye. Take care. Bye bye.